Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us today. And have a great show planned. Again, laugh every week about that, because if we don't have a great show planned, what are we doing on the air, right? We went from this long phase. Interesting note, side note here. Look, it doesn't really mean anything, but I just think these things are fascinating. So when we had the blow up in volatility, and if you didn't notice, I'm jumping right into things, got a lot to pack into the hour. And for those of you that are just joining us for the first time, we refer to this as the market update. First segment every week, we kind of go over what's new, kind of a news breakdown, no fake news here, obviously. Keeping it as a fake news free zone. Okay, so whatever you hear on this show, now I've been wrong before, but all the information we're going to give you is verified, so you don't have to go, you know, cross reference check it and all that kind of stuff. So, but we like to go over the news of the week, give the updates of what's happening, the updates of what's changing in markets. And we got several great other segments to visit and things to go over. Got to revisit a couple topics of stuff that we've talked about in the last couple weeks. But as always, like I said earlier, we're going to start off with the market update. And this is the market that keeps on giving, really. And that's coming off of this long sideways movement. Right, we talked at great length at the end of last year about volatility, suppressed volatility for too long a period of time, and what can happen. And then, sure enough, in January, late January, January 25th, I believe, is when volatility started picking up. And then that led into those days where the Dow was down 1,200 points. I'm sure you guys remember those. And wasn't a surprise. We've talked about volatility in great length. And if you want to go, if you want to hear about that, or if you're just listening for the first time and you want to hear an explanation about what happened in the first part of the year, go back to go to knowyourriskradio.com and go to our archives. We've got, we did several episodes on it. We had guests on the radio show with me talking about volatility and the nature of volatility and the inevitability of what was going to happen, and it sure enough came to fruition in late January. So you can go back and listen to that. But since then, we reached all-time highs right before that in January, and then had about 11, I think S&P dropped 11.7% top to bottom, and then made some bounce backs, but essentially moved sideways. So we went 7 months before breaking through to new all-time highs. And interestingly enough, that's seen as a moderate correction, or what we refer to as somewhere between a 0 to 10% loss in the market over a period of time is what we call a correction, right? Well, that is the longest sideways correction since 1961. So, this market continues to break records, not all of them good. And quite honestly, I would expect that to continue, which is one of the reasons that we're focused so much on risk. And a client asked me earlier in the week, we were talking about this specific thing, and he goes, everything in this market, and it seemed like this for the last 9 years. This is him talking to me. And he goes, Zach, why is it that everything about this market seems to be in extremes? And I went, you know, that's a really interesting way to put it. And we hadn't put it in that same language, but none of this is surprising to me. And the reason it's not is because the market is reflecting on a very extreme scenario. Right. They refer to the period really of the last 35, 40 years as the Great Moderation. Which in and of itself scares me, right? It's a great moderation. It's where we figured out, man cracked the code of economics and finance, and we figured out how to slowly but consistently grow our economies, and we've cracked the code, right? We've broken through to the other side, to quote The Doors and Jim Morrison. you know, the hubris of man is never ending. There's nothing new under the sun. We haven't cracked anything. We've figured out manipulation. We've figured out how to masterfully manipulate the fiat currency system and the fractional reserve banking system that we all have the privilege of living in and investing in. And that's all that you've seen happen. So, you know, it's inputs equal outputs, right? When the backdrop of a society or a market or a financial system is extreme on any level, right, whether it's debt, whether it's government intervention into foreign markets or domestic markets, whether it's unprecedented central bank cooperation or what I like to refer to as collusion, you know, whether it's extreme politics on either side, on both sides. And, you know, then and we can break it right down into the politics side of it. We talked about this a few weeks back. But noticing that how over the last 10 years, the shape of the electorate in the country has even gotten extreme, meaning that when we looked at people on the right, and let's say we made that red, right, and we have people on the left and we make that blue. OK, like everything else in life, voters or constituents or voting bases follow a bell shaped curve. Right. So if we're looking at the Republicans, and we've got a red-colored bell-shaped curve on the left tail of that curve, we'd consider that very moderate, or maybe what we would call rhinos, right? And in the middle of the bell-shaped curve, at the peak of the bell, we'd say, okay, that's more your traditional conservative Americans. And on the right side of the curve, you'd have your extreme right. And same with, you know, exact same thing, kind of a mirror image on the left side with a blue bell-shaped curve. And then you combine those in the past, and that was a very good model for the American electorate, meaning that the vast majority, I want to say 65-70%, again, according to bell-shaped curve, I don't need to think about these percentages, it's just math, but we would see that the vast majority of Americans were on the moderate right, moderate left, right? And that has been the case for as long as really we've had the data to look at it. Now, the interesting thing that's happened in the last 10 years is for the first time ever, we've got a bimodal distribution, which means that the majority of voters on both sides are way further to the extremes of the bell-shaped curve. And so we've got the majority of voters in this country are no longer moderates. They're no longer in the middle. And so instead of a bell-shaped curve, you've got an M-shaped curve. And that's an extreme condition, right? And what we all know, common sense is all too uncommon these days, but through common sense, what we know is that outputs equal inputs. So when we look at a country that's got 115% debt to GDP, deficits in the $1 trillion to $2 trillion range and forecasted to only go up, the lowest interest rates in human history, bond valuations, real estate valuations, stock valuations at all-time highs, the greatest wealth gap in the history of the country, including 1928 and 1929. All of these inputs are extreme, so I would expect nothing less from the market. Now, the flip side of that is one of the reasons that we think that there's a good possibility that over the next, you know, 6, 12, 18, 20 months, that you could see the market go substantially higher in an extreme fashion. Does that mean that that's the way we're positioning assets and we're counting on that? No, we're sticking to our plans. We're sticking to our guns. We're sticking to the process. We're continuing to manage risk. We're not getting lazy. But what I think that we should also focus on is that when it ends, when, not if, when it ends, this trajectory of extreme outcomes will most likely continue. And as a matter of fact, I don't see it as being any other way. And got another conversation with another client. For those of you just joining us, this is Zach Abraham, and you're listening to Know Your Risk Radio. A little bit late, Darren, but I got it in. See, I get ranting and I get going and I forget to, you know, do our, what do we call those? Are those resets? Okay, see, this isn't my first job, obviously. I'm just a finance nerd that somebody was naive enough to give a microphone to. But anyway, getting back to where we were, now I got off track. See, this is why I don't do the resets. But no, talking about the extreme inputs equaling extreme outputs. And a conversation that I had again earlier this week is you know, they said, you know, what's extreme, Zach? What, you know, what do you think's extreme? And I said, well, I don't know. What do you think's extreme? And he goes, well, you know, 50% decline would be extreme. And I go, yeah, that'd be extreme. And he goes, you know, 60? And I go, yeah. And he goes, yeah, I know. But he goes, you know, market can't go down more than, you know, 60%. And I kind of looked at him sideways and went, well, why do you say that? And he goes, well, you know, it's the only time it ever happened is, you know, at the height of the great financial crisis, and that didn't really last long. And he goes, I can't see us going through anything worse than that. And I said, well, what about 1929? And he goes, well, that was a Great Depression. We figured things out. Listen, these are logical and philosophical leaps that people take. And one thing that markets and human behavior, which we've got to remember that they're one and the same, really, right? The market's just made up of a bunch of people. Whatever breakpoint we set up, whatever we count on not happening, the more we count on that not happening or that breakpoint, the more firm we set up that breakpoint, just through the law of averages, the more likely we are to see that extreme breached or a new extreme set. And the idea that we are immune, and I've heard this a lot too, the idea that 2008, 2009 was a one-off event and we'll never see anything like that. The idea that Janet Yellen can sit up there on Capitol Hill and say, we will not see another financial crisis in my or your lifetime. I don't consider that an academic or a fact-based statement. I consider that to be a product of pure hubris and pride. Because the fact is nobody knows. And then people coincidentally say to me, they go, well, you don't know either. And I go, but I'm not predicting. And they go, well, you think things are going to drop? And I said, no. You're misunderstanding what I'm saying. I think things will return to the average. Right? That's a much different thing. I'm not sitting there saying that, okay, Robinson Cano hit 440 over the weekend, which I have no clue if he did or not. So, again, that could be fake news if you think that's serious. Okay, but I'm using this as an analogy. Robinson Cano hit 440 over the weekend in a four-game series with the Houston Astros. He's broken through. He's now a 440 hitter. Or is it more likely that he will return to his lifetime average or closely there to it? And if any of you would like to make that bet or a similar bet, call me at 1-866-779-RISK because I'll take that bet all day long. It's a law of averages. Everything returns to the mean. Right? And when a resumption or when a turn to the mean or a return to the mean equals a 40% drop in asset prices, you should probably be a little more focused on risk management, right? We're not making any predictions about when that happens. If you hear me or anybody else make predictions about when, turn it off or run the other direction, because nobody knows. And just because somebody gets the when right, as a matter of fact, we got the when right in 2007, 2008. But not precisely. We were early. But the why or the what was correct, right? We can look at a problem and go, look, I don't know exactly how this is going to unfold, but it's not going to end well. There's going to be turmoil, right? And I think it's really important that we separate that from market timing. Because market timing has turned into this horrifically ugly word. And I think it's important that what we remember when discussing market timing or trying to predict what markets do, if we're sitting down there going, I got a hunch the market's going to go up, or I got a hunch the market's going to go down, that's a great way to lose a lot of money. However, if we're doing analysis and we're seeing the inputs to the market, if we're seeing the valuations, if we're seeing debt levels that have all corresponded in the past to bad outcomes, then paying a little more attention to risk management, paying a little more attention to the mitigation of potential losses, that's called wisdom. Right? That's called being conservative. I call that being a fiduciary. And it should be a byproduct of what I like to refer to as the financial industry Hippocratic Oath. And that's where the risk management model comes in so important when managing other people's funds. Because the game shouldn't be just to make as much as possible. The game should be, how do we accomplish our clients' financial needs while taking as little risk as possible? I mean, that seems like common sense, right? But that's not what people do. And they may attempt to do it by saying, well, you know, you're 65 years old, so history tells us you should have more than 65% exposed to stocks. And look, maybe that's correct. But the composition of somebody's portfolio should rely or depend on a lot more than their age. And for instance, you know, we've got high net worth clients that have, you know, several million dollars with us. And, you know, what the thing that we need to look at for them, and they still have a fairly modest lifestyle, the thing that we need to be looking at for them is, look, considering the length of the run, this is the longest bull market in U.S. history, highest valuations across the board, every asset class for the most part, excluding a few commodities and soft metals and base metals and things like that. But how much risk should we be exposed to? Like I was talking to the couple that I met with yesterday, and we were talking about what is their appetite for risk. How much risk can they put up with? How much volatility can they put up with? And they said, you know, basically you tell us. And I said, well, look, you've got several million dollars here. And this is your income need. This is what we're going to be looking at. And this is what we need to be able to, you know, live on throughout retirement. And I said, so we should build a portfolio. We should design a portfolio, somewhere in the neighborhood of generating you between 7 and 8.5% a year. And we should do it as safely as we possibly can, because the only thing that could possibly derail your retirement is a catastrophic loss. So if I'm doing my job as a fiduciary, I need to build a portfolio that is incapable of a catastrophic loss. Now, if this was 2009, it's a different story, because you had one of the biggest collapses in financial market history, which means that assets were priced incredibly cheap. And that's a period of time where we'd want to go a little bit out on the risk curve because there's so much value there. Today is the inverse scenario. And so going back to the original argument, or the original statement I was making, was that do not be continued to be surprised when you see extreme results one way or the other out of the stock market. Because the extreme conditions that have birthed this are still very much in play. And in a lot of ways, especially in a geopolitical sense, we're doubling down. The world is getting crazier, not more sane. And if history teaches us anything, that most likely will continue until there's some type of reset, until there's some type of big correction of sorts or whatever. You know, what's the old saying? I can't remember if it was Teddy Roosevelt, and I'm probably going to butcher this, but something about, you know, the more we want to see what's going to happen in the future is equivalent or equal to how much we should look in the past. It's not new. We're not new. It isn't different this time. There's no easy way out. The bill doesn't pay itself. Someone's got to pay the... I mean, you guys know all the analogies. We've talked about it on the show a million times. But continue to expect extremes. And so when you're stress testing your portfolio, or you're stress testing your retirement plan, you need to... If your retirement plan doesn't hold up under the weight of a 70% loss, you're exposed to too much risk. People go, oh, that's extreme. Other financial advisors would get on here and tell you that's extreme. That's fine. But you've seen the proof. How many people have you seen have to get a job in retirement or go back to work in retirement over the last 18 years? We all know people. Go tell them how extreme it is. Go tell them how that's not possible. And like I said, I'm saying all this with the expectation that asset prices will probably continue to rise and could very well rise significantly over the next, you know, 8 to 24 months. So we're not trying to time it by any stretch of the imagination. We're also not trying to be greedy. We're also managing the risk, which is what everybody should be doing. Now, will everybody do that? No, it'll be just like last time. The higher the market goes, the more money people will push into the middle, because that's what they do. Greed takes over. Hardest thing in investing to do is sit there and watch your neighbor get rich. Everybody buys what they wish they would have bought until all of a sudden it stops. This time will be no different. And frankly, that's one of the other reasons why I think that this market go a lot higher is because I don't still sense, and this is completely anecdotal, but I still don't sense that hysteria. I mean, it's getting there. You see signs of it. You see, you know, these ebullient, you know, celebratory statements about, oh, my 401k is over a million. I mean, you definitely see signs. But I just think that you've got all these extreme outcomes, you've got all these extreme inputs, and I just think it's probably going to get a lot crazier before it before the music stops. But it will stop. And the crazier we get to the upside is the crazier it'll get to the downside. It's nothing new. Nothing new under the sun. So other things we've got in the market update. This is a long one. We're going long here. A lot to cover there. That's, sorry, a little bit of a rant. The other thing we continue to watch is global macroeconomic environment. So how other economies around the world outside of the U.S. are growing. There's definitely been a slowdown in growth. It's not recessionary by any stretch of the imagination, but there's been a marked slowdown in growth on a global basis. So that's something we want to continue to keep our eyes on. The other thing that we've talked about on the show before, at some length, is currency wars. You know, when this whole thing started 10 years ago, the thing that we kept going back to was, and I said that's actually an email to a client of mine this morning, was, you know, look, this may happen, that may happen. It may have a bad, a bad effect on the market over a period of time. Maybe it's good, you know, whatever. But I go, at the end of the day, as long as we live in a fractional reserve banking system, which is what we live in, and as long as we live in a fiat currency denominated financial system, the guys that have the power of the printing press, the central banks, as long as they are willing and continue to print more and more money, they can continue through the devaluation of their currency to drive asset prices higher. And until those keys get taken away, until the central banks cede that power, or that power is taken from them, which is most likely the way it'll work, They can continue to do this. All right. If something is denominated in a currency like a dollar and you are determined to continually print that currency and devalue and deface that currency, then a byproduct, and it's you know, I don't think it's too hard to understand, a byproduct that is you can continue to force asset prices higher when they're denominated in said currency. And you can continue to do that until the currency suffers a blow of confidence. And then the value of the currency starts dropping in a precipitous manner and in a manner that of which the central banks lose control over it. So really, you know, I don't think the music will truly stop until that happens. Now, the interesting thing I said about currency wars going on is we're kind of starting to see what looks like the beginning of that. Does that mean the beginning of a 10-year process, the beginning of a 16-month process? I don't know. But it's something we've been watching for a long time. China is now going from devaluing its currency to protecting it because it was dropping too quickly. We see the same thing happen in Turkey. Venezuela, we all know that story. Several different places in Africa, South Africa being one of them. So I, you know, again, not trying to call anything or trying to predict anything, but you know, the currency wars and currency valuations to me are the linchpin of the whole thing. And there's some smoke. I think you're starting to see the engine and the apparatus overheat. And, you know, and I cannot tell you what a big trend shift that is, that you've got major economies now out there concerned about defending the value of their currency. That has not been the case for the last decade. It's been a race to the bottom. And so we haven't gone full tilt that way yet. But this is what a beginning of that process could and would look like. So that's something that we want to keep in mind. The other one, I've got to bring this up before we go. Tesla, right? We've talked about that in great length on the show. For those of you that are joining us for the first time, we do not advocate stock picks on the radio. I'm not going to tell you to do this, do that. We currently have no positions in that, but we are watching this Tesla situation unfold sort of like we would watch a soap opera. It's just incredibly fascinating and intriguing to me. You got quite a character as the CEO of that company. The valuation is just ridiculous. There's just so much drama surrounding it. It's just something that we, you know, it's entertainment purposes. But, you know, the market went haywire about 2 or 3 weeks ago when Elon Musk, the CEO of Tesla, came out and said, we're going to take the company private. I've got funding secured for $420 a share. And it was a preposterous statement and one that I still acknowledged had the capability of being true because, again, we've seen a lot of preposterous things take place over the last decade, right? I mean, you know, to have something ridiculous or overpriced or, you know, whatever, for something like that to occur isn't exactly news. Having said that, due to the capital structure of Tesla, due to the debt they have outstanding, due to the cash flow problems they already have, the idea of using a leveraged buyout to take them private was just ridiculous because to do a leveraged buyout, you've got to issue debt. And then the idea is you let the cash flow of the company pay off the debt. Well, when the company is burning $4 billion a year, right, their negative cash flow of $4 billion a year, which looks like it's going to accelerate north of five, I don't know how you make that math work. Well, sure enough, Musk comes out, was it last week? Week before, and said, well, we've decided to stay public because of the shareholder. Right. Yeah, right. And so more and more, it looks exactly like what I thought it was, which is just trying to manipulate the stock higher because he's got debt expiring in the next 8 to 12 months. And the debt is convertible to equity, meaning that if the stock price is above $365 a share, I believe, he can convert that debt to equity so he doesn't have to make the debt payment. So I think he is just a madman scrambling, trying to do anything he can to keep that stock price north of $365, because if he's got to make that debt payment, he's got serious problems on his hands. Not to mention the accounting issues that you know, I'm not going to accuse him of fraud, but there's definitely creative accounting that's gone on at Tesla. So whatever cash we think he's got on the balance sheet, my bet is that it's probably 25 to 35% less than they're reporting. And I don't think it's out and out fraud. I just think it's, you know, accounting gimmicks. So if we think he's pushed for cash now, I think it's probably worse. Anyway, it's just fascinating because everybody, all the Tesla fans were going private. And I just sat there and I said, guys, it's not going to happen. I don't know if you can't do math or whatever, but unless you can get paid to borrow $70 billion, I don't know how it was going to be feasible. Sure enough, it's not. Surprise, surprise. So I'm gloating a little bit there, but it it's not even about that. It's really pointing out just all of the ludicrous stuff going on. And then not to mention the fact that now the SEC came out and said they're investigating Tesla. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, anything, the SEC can investigate somebody and nothing can come of it. You know, not trying to jump, you know, the gun here. But we continue to watch that situation just because it's fascinating. And I've just never seen a company like that. There's just no comp. I just don't have a comp. Everybody tries to compare it to Amazon. Amazon was a completely different scenario. Obviously, they were cash flow negative and didn't produce a profit for years and years, but it wasn't because they weren't profitable. It was because they took all their profits and all their proceeds and they reinvested them in the company. So it was a purposeful move. The businesses themselves were profitable. Now, I don't think they're as profitable as most people are forecasting them to be. And I still think Amazon is great of a company as it is, as much as I admire the way that they've done things in terms of executing their business plan. I still don't think the valuation makes sense on that one either. But to compare, and we've talked about this at great length on the show, now everybody is using that for the backdrop. And I just sit there and I go, where's the wisdom? You're using an exception to a rule. And for the most part, one exception to the rule, right? You're using that now as the model for everything else, including companies whose business structures look nothing like Amazon. Amazon's a retailer. Tesla's a manufacturer. It's a completely different game. You don't need capital on hand to be a retailer for the most part. You need a ton of capital on hand to be a manufacturer. Cash flow is everything. So anyway, we continue to watch that with bated breath and being excited just because it's good theater. So anyway, I've gone on way too long. That could be the longest market update in the history of the show. But we'll get on to the rest of this stuff. Got another segment coming up saying investment performance, it's all relative, right? And I think this is really prescient. It's something that everybody needs to understand. We got another section on politics and finance, and we got an update on another one of our favorite topics, which is the FANG stocks. Some really interesting developments on that front. And I continue to see virtually everybody I sit and talk about or talk to, client, not client, friend, family, whatever, everybody owns them and everybody's cheering them on. Some really interesting updates on the FANG stocks. So stick with us. And look, if anything that we talked about interests you, if you want to know how we're managing risk, which means how are we lowering the cost of our portfolios, improving the actual performance, all the while lowering the exposure to risk, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You know, you can email us. You can go to the website and email us if you don't want to talk to anybody. You can call and request our free booklet. We can do a phone, you know, side-by-side comparison over the phone. Takes about 15 minutes. There's no gimmicks, no sales tricks. We'll just tell you exactly what we're doing, what it costs, and what the performance has been. If you want to set up a consultation, give us a call. Anyway, or if you just want a second opinion, which, you know, obviously, I think you should have. Give us a call. Again, the number is 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website at knowyourriskradio.com. Hope to hear from you guys. Anyway, stick with us. We'll be right back with another segment. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Dory Monson with my financial advisor, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. And Zach, what I love about you guys is your focus on risk management.
Well, Dory, we're a fiduciary and a holistic retirement planning firm. Our goals are simple. Get our clients the highest returns with the least amount of risk and cost.
I know they're normally used for safety, but how risky are bonds right now?
If a significant portion of your retirement portfolio is in cash or bonds, that just doesn't work in this low interest rate environment on the verge of inflation. You need a bond replacement strategy.
I gotta tell you, you have to read it. Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn that bond replacement strategy, learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Did you know one of the biggest threats you face during retirement is the high cost of long-term care? Hi, this is Brian Ott with 525 Advisors and host of Long-Term Care Radio on Cairo every Saturday morning at 7. Now, the facts are clear on this. Nearly 3 out of 4 of you will end up in a long-term care situation during your retirement years. And the problem is, traditional medical insurance and government programs won't pay for this care when you need it. Meaning, you are at risk of burning through your savings or becoming a burden on your family members. If you would like to learn how you can protect yourself and the people you care about most from the high cost of long-term care, then I invite you to join me for one of our upcoming long-term care planning classes. These are free educational events where you can learn about new options, including plans that pay you back if you never use them. And I'll even give you a free copy of my book, A Guide to Long-Term Care Planning. Sign up today at 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com, or give us a call, 425-748-8188.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Thank you for sticking with us. And the next segment that we want to, and I actually spoke to a client on the way up to the show today about this very thing. And it's something that we talk about and we've thought about and researched quite a bit. And I think it's very, very important for investors to really grasp this concept. And in some ways, I think it may be the most important thing for investors to grasp, period. And I don't ever hear people talking about it. But that principle or that idea that I think investors need to grasp is that investment performance or investment gains are all relative. And this fits right into our risk management strategy, and I'll come back around and tie those things together so it makes some sense. But investments are all relative. And like I said, this is a cornerstone in risk management. Now, what do we mean by they're all relative? Well, as we've stated on the show before, money is agnostic, right? It doesn't care how it gets made. Whether you made $100 million off of, you know, a cattle farm in South Dakota that ended up being, you know, full of oil, or you made $100 million, you know, betting on a stock of some kind, or you bought, you know, $100,000 worth of Amazon in 1998, or, you know, whatever. Your money does not care how it got made, right? It doesn't spend any differently. That's why we say it's agnostic. It doesn't care. But all investment returns are related in some way. And what is that way that they're related? Well, the risk. The risk-reward scenario. And that's the lens that we should look at all investments through. If we can generate a higher return and a similar or lower cost in investment A than we can in investment B, which has a higher cost or a greater risk, then that in and of itself is the decision. We should always go with an investment or a stock or whatever the case may be, or a house that has the best risk reward setup, you know, for our budget, or, you know, that's inside of, you know, the universe that we can afford or we can look at or whatever. And although that sounds like a very simple concept or common knowledge, I don't see it used or deployed or truly understood by the majority of investors I sit down and talk to. And one of our investors is an older gentleman. He has a very, very secure portfolio, not a lot of risk exposure. He's very, you know, he's later in life. It's very important that he doesn't suffer substantial losses of any kind. And over this sideways moving market in the last 7 to 8 months, his portfolio is, you know, flat. Maybe it's a little negative. I think he's slightly up now, but, you know, there hasn't been much. There hasn't been much movement. And he's probably listening today. So if you are, I hope you take this the best way possible. In no way am I denigrating him at all, because I understand it and I hear it all the time. And his thought was, you know, Zach, which was a great question, Zach, should we continue to contribute to the investment portfolio? But, you know, since we really haven't made much this year, should we put the money into savings and make some money there or whatever? And I said, well, look, it's a fair question. And I think it's a good question. And obviously, the first thought that you as the listener or even the client might have is that I am inherently biased to tell you that that money should go in the investment portfolio. And I'll acknowledge that. Having said that, my bias is not the reason for the answer. If our alternative is parking our money into a savings account or a CD that is yielding us less than 1.5% or even 2% in an environment where the real inflation rate is probably somewhere between 3.5%, even 4%, what we're doing is we're locking in a certain gain. Now, we may feel better about the fact that we're seeing that nominal amount of cash rise, no matter how modest it really is, you know, which is a lot of these savings accounts are at 0.3, 0.4. So, I mean, it's pretty pathetic, but it's better than seeing nothing or moving sideways, right? And look, if cash is a part of your portfolio, that, you know, which is totally understandable, and for most investors, it's, you know, there's a component that's cash. You know, that's okay. You know, we deal with that. That's part of the diversification process, and we need to have cash on hand. But what we need to constantly be doing is saying, okay, if we have cash on hand, we are recognizing the idea that instant liquidity at all times and relative stability of value is worth more to us than the productivity of that money. Because if we're putting money in current interest rates and things like CDs and savings accounts right now, in our minds, we're saying we're not going to lose, but in reality, we are absolutely going to lose. We're guaranteed to lose. Now, not a lot. Obviously, you're not going to pull your account up next Tuesday and see that you lost 40%. But you're absolutely going to lose. And if you can be in an investment or a portfolio or a diversified portfolio or whatever that doesn't present you with a whole lot more risk, you know, maybe there's some volatility, a little bit up and down, but it's not the kind of portfolio where you could lose 30%. If you're in a portfolio like that, and that portfolio has the realistic opportunity, you know, to make 7, 8, 9%, it may not play out over a 6 or 7 month period of time. It may not play out for over a year. But we got to play the averages, right? And the spread between 1% and 7% or even 6.5%, I will gladly accept some years where we don't hold to that trend. I will gladly accept some years where we underperform that spread, because I know that on a long enough timeline, and we're not talking 30 years, you know, 4, 6, 8 years, that the spread between those average performances, 1% and 6.5%, it's big enough to justify that short-term volatility. And when we're making that quote unquote cautious decision to deploy that money over into cash, we need to immediately be saying to ourselves, look, we are shielding ourselves potentially from some volatility, but the spread, right, the differential, the performance differential between that and a secure, you know, stable type portfolio like the one we're discussing with this gentleman, this client of mine, the spread on those two is you know, it's big enough to drive a Mack truck through. And you've got to play the percentages. And when it doesn't go your way for an 8-month period of time, and we're not holding to that trend, or for a year or for a year and a half, there's that capitulation point where we throw our hands up in the air and we go, you know, this is no longer worth it. It's not working. And unfortunately, as investors, we typically make that decision right before the turn. And that applies to when we sell. You know, the vast majority of us, even though we know better, we sell when the pain gets too great. And then coincidentally, on the flip side of it, we buy when we can't stand missing out anymore. And that's why it's so important that we check our emotions. And it's so important why for us to evaluate our emotions on a consistent basis. And ask ourselves, what is driving this? Is there a rational reason? Can I model this? And here's another way to look at it. If I continue to generate 1% with my money, will I accomplish my goals? And if the answer to that is no, then that's probably not a move you should make. And if you are going to move a substantial amount of your portfolio to cash, which is not always a bad thing, you need to have criteria surrounding that decision, meaning you need to sit there and go, okay, under what circumstances will I deploy this capital in a more effective manner? So this money is being more productive for me. And when I reach these points, what will I do? You have to have a game plan. Because what inevitably will happen if you pull all your money out and go to cash because things scare you, you're going to have what we refer to as confirmation bias, meaning everything you see will confirm to you that you made the right decision. And you'll begin to look for it, right? It's like the whole adage of, you know, you will see what it is that you're looking for. And then you'll end up in a scenario. And this has happened to me in certain instances and circumstances with certain investments over my career. Is that you turn around and you know, all of a sudden you've given up on massive gains and massive turns or massive changes in markets or securities or stocks or whatever the case may be, and you never changed. You never got back in the game. And then you reach that point where you go, well, I've missed out on the last 6 or 7 years. I can't get in now. And you set yourself up to make bad decisions. Because if you won't get in now, or you didn't get back in 2010 or 12 or 13 or 15 or whatever, what will prompt you to get back in? And if you're like most investors, what will prompt you to get back in is when the market runs even further, which we inherently know is what? Just by definition, it's closer to the top. And so to wrap that all up, we have to keep in mind that investment performance is relative. And you guys have heard us talk about our fixed indexed annuity, dirtiest word in investing, right? As a bond replacement, not as stocks, is a great alternative for bonds. I had a conversation with another client. They were worried that their annuity this year or over the last 12 months, I think it was only up 1% or 0.5% or something like that. And he was deeply concerned. And this fixed indexed annuity that we use as a bond replacement made over 13% in 2017. And I said to him, I go, well, I don't understand what's troubling you. And he goes, well, I thought we were supposed to average 6. And I go, well, you're doing better than that right now. And he kind of went like, what? And I go, well, in 2017, this thing was up over 13%. And I said, so over the last 2 years, you're at about 7% average. And I said, do you know what bonds have made on average over the last 3 years? you know, somewhere between -1% and -3% without considering an advisor fee. And remember, this is our bond money. Your bond money is up 13-14% in the last 2 years. That's phenomenal. Again, relative to what are the options, right? What is bond money? It's safe money. So we compare it to CDs. We compare it to other bonds. We compare it to savings accounts. I mean, how many of you would be thrilled if your safe money, your savings account, your bond account had made 13.5-14% over the last 2 years? You'd be amazed. But he was looking at his stock portfolio and comparing it, and he'd lost sight of, wait a second, remember what this is. This is bond money. We knew when we bought this, we weren't going to make 30% a year. So what went from being disappointment about the performance of the investment went to, oh yeah, you're right. That's pretty dang good. We've been averaging 7% a year, and we were only counting on averaging, you know, 5.5-6. So if you want to know how we're doing this, if you want to know what our bond replacement strategy is that's insured against loss, that's averaged, you know, upwards of 5-6% a year, depending on the product, don't quote me, and that's no guarantee. But these products that have zero cost, zero downside risk, they're insured against loss, and they've averaged between 5-6.5% a year over the last, you know, 30 years. And that's what we're using as a bond replacement. They rise with the market. And when the market drops, they flatline. They go flat. Market starts going up again. They go up with them. It's called a fixed indexed annuity. May not be right for everybody, but we've been averaging, you know, north of 7% over the last 5-6 years. And that's what we're using as a bond substitute. Shields our clients from rising interest rates, default risk, all that stuff. Low interest rates. If you'd like to know about that, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can also go to the radio show website at knowyourriskradio.com. Look at our iPad or our iTunes page, different episodes, all that stuff. And give us a call. If nothing else, just to chat, get a second opinion, get our free booklet, schedule a consultation. Anyway, we got to run. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Call now and get our brand new version of Common Sense Investing. It's our complimentary booklet that shows you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, Zach, and I got to tell you, you have to read Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right. Thank you for sticking with us. And got a last segment. I ran over. We had one other segment. I was going to do a revisitation of politics and finance. But I got to jump to this. I think it's more pressing because, I've never... trying to think, and I've thought about this a lot. I don't think I've ever seen a scenario in which a group of stocks was more widely invested in by more people than these FANG stocks. And we own a couple, not heavy positions, certainly not all of them. I don't want to talk about which ones. I don't want to give any recommendations, buy, sell. Obviously, you guys know by now I can't do that or I'll get in trouble. But, interestingly enough, the narrative is really starting to switch, and we see that with Mr. Trump. And just to get outside of any ambiguity, And I don't want to offend you if you're a shareholder at all, because again, this fits right in with what I've said about Amazon. This isn't me admonishing these companies. This isn't me decrying their leadership or anything like that. This is more just an observation of fact, which is, you know, there's a lot of things that remind me today of the early 1900s, the days of the robber barons, you know, which really laid the foundation for Teddy Roosevelt to be elected, the Bull Moose Party, and really come in and start swinging the axe of antitrust laws. And we haven't seen this nearly as much in America since then until really the last 10 years. And when you look at Amazon's business model, they are unapologetically monopolistic. Okay? Now, again, don't be offended by that. That's an accomplishment in capitalism. Right? This is, if anything, it's a testament to how well they've run their business. Nevertheless, it results in a scenario where the size and scope of a company, the entirety of the space in the economy that they control, is no longer a net benefit to society. And that's why the underpinnings or the baseline of capitalism is the idea of competition. Through competition, consumers get better quality, they get better prices, they get a better result. And as a monopoly grows too big, even when it's a product of its own success, which it virtually always is, if it's not corruption or collusion of some type, those monopolies exist or come to existence because of good execution. But that doesn't change the fact that they are no longer a net benefit to society. Am I saying that Amazon doesn't have any benefit? No, what I'm saying is companies like Amazon and Google, I mean, think of the amount of internet traffic Google controls. Think about the influence that Google algorithms have over the voting in elections. Think about the control that Google algorithms have over what images you see when you type something in, what stories are brought up when you type in something like Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. The control that Google currently has over the dissemination of information is really unlike anything we've witnessed in the past. And it's very much monopolistic. That's just a fact. You may not like it. You may be a happy shareholder of Google, but it's monopolistic. Amazon is doing virtually the exact same thing on the retail side of things. Except that what their business plan includes is not just retail. They're going to go after package deliverers like FedEx. They're going to go after organic food distributors, right, with the acquisition of Whole Foods. They're coming after everybody. They want to be just the world's monopoly. And remember, nothing's different. There's nothing new under the sun. If a monopoly or a company with monopolistic tendencies, if it's bad in 1900, if it's bad in 1910, it's bad now. And I think that's got a big part to play in why we've seen stagnant wages for so long. You've got this new era of the new American monopoly. And you start to see Trump talk about it. You're starting to see even political opposition, people on the left discussing it. And personally, I think that this will be the ammunition. Again, when? Who knows, right? But I think this is the way that a couple of these companies are, the way their meteoric share price is going to stall out. So if you've got a portfolio that's too over-dependent on those things, if you have a portfolio that's got more than 30 or 40% tech exposure, you need to make some changes. You need to rebalance some things. And if you need some help on how to do that, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can talk to me and get the free booklet. You can email us. You don't have to call if you don't want to have that conversation. We can do things over email. But get a second opinion. De-risk your portfolio. Get better returns and pay less in fees. We've been talking about this for 3 years. It exists. It's real. Give us a call. Anyway, we got to run. Have a great weekend. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with another great show. I hope you join us. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.